Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Steak and Rusty, tailgate brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. He's the incomparable head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs. He's Kirby Smart. He joins us. Good morning, Coach. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, guys. Y'all doing all right? Thank you. Doing good. You babysitting today, I see.
Well, he's a lot to handle, these kids.
I'm a lot less to handle these days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what do you think of the remarkable weight loss of Rusty Manziel?
Yeah, give me that opinion on that.
I'm very jealous. As I tend to go the other direction, he's going the opposite direction.
Oh, man.
Mary Beth talk about how good Rusty looks?
She does. She says all the time how much he's cleaned up and he's got a new wardrobe.
I do have a new wardrobe.
Miller Brothers doing him right.
Taking care of me, yeah.
Hey, we just had Quinn Snyder on saying nice things about you. I know Andrew Saltzman and all the guys of the Hawks were thrilled to have you at the game the other night, front and center. What happened, though, Rusty, that night that was unique?
Well, I say this, and I want to get his comment on the athletes in the NBA, but I will say this. I'm standing there. I bump into Coach and his son there in the hallway, and a guy walks up. And I've told people this story, Coach, and they don't believe me. A guy walks up to you and hands you his driver's license, and his name is Kirby Smart.
100%
Has that ever happened?
I was taken back. I thought it was a fake ID of somebody. I said, what is this?
And it was
real. I mean, I didn't verify it, but I was like, wait, is that – what? That's my name. I mean, the middle was different, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Well, we saw you. I saw you at Stegman. Rusty saw you at Stegman. You love sports, but you're a big basketball fan for a number of reasons. Talk about that for a second.
Oh, I love all sports, but I love UGA sports. I love following the student-athletes here. So I've been trying to get courtside seats. I couldn't buy my way into the courtside seats, and finally – purchased enough to get down there and sit and enjoy the games. I don't get to go as much as I'd like to, but we like going. I like going and seeing them, and my kids, all three of them, enjoy being involved. And I mean, Athens is a great community, and you can go watch a sporting event that's really world class anytime you want. So it's fun. The Hawks game was really cool for me because I don't know that I've ever been to an NBA basketball game, or if I have, it was 20 or 30 years ago. So it was really cool.
For real,
the size of those guys.
You haven't been to an NBA game maybe in your life.
Bowl game, we might have got to go a long time ago, but I never remember. I think I went to a Heat game when I was coaching the Dolphins, but man, it was a long time ago.
Kirby Smart with us on Sports Radio 929 The Game. I enjoyed your press conference a lot for how thoughtful it was the other day. One of the things I really appreciated, and if you can elaborate, of now I get to see who loves the game of football. That's what I love about spring. It's not about NIL. It's not about dollars. It's not about hearing from all these other people. I get to see who has a love of the game over these next, 16 practices. So elaborate on what that means with all the distraction around football and portal and NIL these days.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it boils back to. I try to find common denominator. I'm always looking for what makes good players good, what makes great players great, and what separates the best players we've had from the rest. And that's usually the common denominator. They love the game. They like to compete. And that rises to the top. It was just ironic that came about in the press conference because the next day was the pro day. So I got to visit with probably five or six different head coaches and organizations yesterday morning, and they were talking about the same thing, not from my press conference, but just that for them, you know, one of the questions they used to always ask us was, well, how's it going to change him when he gets – you know, money. How's it going to change him when he comes into NFL-type money? Is he going to have the same passion, desire? And they used to frame those questions to us all the time, and I understand those questions much better now because we deal with it here. And it really across all college football is the guys that seem to be rising to the top are the ones that actually play hard, because playing hard is it's not like a given. not like everybody does it. I mean, some guys don't play as hard as others, so I like to see the fire and passion.
Coach, you get a lot of questions on Gunnar Stockton. Obviously, he's, you know, who he is, and a lot of people are so familiar with him in state. But a young man that I got a chance to meet his family, a young man from the Northeast, he's a quarterback in your university, Ron Puglisi. I'm not sure you get a ton of questions on him. Obviously, in the thick of this quarterback battle, tell me why you identified him early, why you like him, and why you're excited to see what Ron Puglisi can do with these reps this spring.
Well, he's a competitor. He never flinched during the recruiting process. As you know, it's well documented. You know, yep. We had another commitment at times. I forget the timeline. You know, it was off and on. But he never wavered. And those have been, you know, some of the best kids we've recruited. That really, they're like, well, I don't really care who else is coming. I don't really care who's there. I see the growth and development you've had at the quarterback position. He had a passion and energy about Georgia. He's a really good baseball player. He's got arm talent. He's got size. He had great, you know, his high school tape. He played in a really good league up there, and he's just a competitor. So he's come in, and, you know, he was one of those guys that really flashed when he was on the scout team, and that's traditionally what happens when you have a card, you don't have a read, and you just fire away. And he's made some really good throws on the run. He's got a strong arm, but he does have a long way to go in terms of learning exactly what we're asking him to do, the command of the offense, the volume of the offense. He's getting better at all those things.
What do you mean when you say Gunnar Stockton is not a rah-rah mindset? It's more of a get-to-work kind of mentality. Does that remind you of Stetson a little bit or other guys? Or talk about his leadership.
He's very different. He's very different than Carson. He's very different than Stetson. He's different than Jake and JT. I mean, he's kind of his own person. He's got a quiet confidence about him. You're not going to get a lot of.
Has he got some Nick Chubb to him, kind of?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. He's got a little. I don't want to say it's like it's just quiet confidence. I mean, and that's the way Nick was. Nick, you had to pull it out of Nick, and that's the way it is with Gunnar. And you'd say, well, I don't want my quarterback to be that way. I want my quarterback to be, you know, loud, boisterous, and I mean, he is who he is, and as he gains more confidence, he takes a greater role, but he listens all the time, and you might not think he's listening, but he's listening. He's taking notes, and he's wise, and he's a great kid is what he is.
It's junior days, it's visits, it's nonstop. You're coaching your team, you're trying to recruit the next guys. I think the future guys that are going to be successful is on the topic of what you talked about a few minutes ago. When you're a head coach and you're sitting with a kid, how do you determine who loves football more than recruiting?
I don't know that you. I don't know that you can. You got to turn the tape on and see it. You got to see their willingness to dive into football. I mean, I always remember during the COVID time when Kamari Laster was getting recruited, I'd never met a kid that was more persistent. He wanted to Zoom all the time. He sent videos in. He was hungry. And so these guys that are really hungry for it and can't do without it, they tend to do better in our organization than a guy that, you know, comes and he's wanting to take pictures and he's on his phone the whole time and he's kind of aloof and, you know, you're talking to him and he's checking his phone. I mean, it's just, it's different. And we try to weed that out and find the ones that are like football junkies and they've done better with us. Bullard was that way. He loved it.
Good lesson for any young person listening, by the way, for any interview with that phone and everything else.
Jahi Bohr scholarship. Yeah. Put your phone down.
Let me ask you, Coach, about something else you said, which is I spent 10 years at Bama. I got 10 years here. I'm used to keeping the noise out, right? You're talking about comments made about your offensive coordinator. Kirby likes to keep his friends on staff. This guy, we could find anybody to be better than Mike Bobo. You said, I don't pay attention.
Sure.
So what are the rules? How do you detach when you're the most visible program in America? How do you hear about it but not pay attention to it? Are you really detached enough that you don't let the outside noise get to anybody around the program?
Yeah, I think I don't know that I'm detached enough. I'm confident enough in decision making. It's the strength that I think that I have as a leader of the organization is to look from 10,000 feet down and survey what we have, what we've done, what I've been around. I mean, you know, if this was 10, 15 years ago, you want to question everything. But this is I've been coaching a long time now,
yeah.
And I've worked for some really good coaches, and I've been around some really good coaches, and I've seen the way that I want it done, and I've seen the way other people do it, and you know, we've had a lot of success, and I really am confident in what we do and how we do it, and I think that works. That doesn't mean that college football hasn't changed, and the roster that we're working with now is not the same roster we worked with 5-6 years ago. The schedule that we play is not the same schedule we played 5 or 6 years ago, but I think our strength is in our retention and our continuity. There's a lot of programs that wish they had that same thing.
Do you take any offense when someone says Kirby takes care of his friends and it's hard for to make tough decisions?
No, I don't take any offense to it because they got a job to do too. I respect that's what pays the bills in our industry. You know, we're the bell cow of this university, and the reason we are is because people are so passionate about football. So we help balance the budget. We pay for a lot of other sports here, and if we didn't have mouths and things that promoted our sport, then it wouldn't be as good as it is.
Coach, I made some calls over to East Kyle. Make sure you're paying that weekend pass gate too. As you move forward into the East Cobb world with your young man and your son Andrew Smart.
He had a hell of a start to his East Cobb season, right? Was it first pitch of the year?
I tell you what, he started better than he started last year. Last year we came off spring break and he didn't. I don't think he got a hit in 3 games, and then he started off better this time.
I saw the video. But that was something.
He got a lot to work on still. You got to keep convincing him of that.
Can you talk about the wide receiver position? Obviously, somewhere that you need more production. You got kids coming in recruiting. You got portal kids coming in, and you got Colby coming back as well. Talk about a lot of Georgia fans want to be better there.
Yeah, I want to be better there too. I want to be better everywhere. But that's one that you know, we had a lot of guys back last year, but it was weird because it wasn't that we had like the guy, you know, like the go-to guy, whether that was Ladder Brock the year before, it's been George before. I mean, you just had that guy. We had a big committee of guys and never really got our rhythm between the guys that were out, the guys we lost, the guys that were injured. What's good about that group right now is there's some depth there, some competition there. I mean, you got the young ones who practice one day right now, and I'm like, ooh, man, these guys, you know, they look good. They look like they can help us. Then we got some old ones between Dylan, Colby, Cole Spear, a lot of the older guys out there that I'm like, man, these guys look good. Branch and Noah are there. So there's just a lot of competition. There's a lot of answers. We got to figure out what the new guys do best, and we got to bring the freshmen along now. We can't, you know, wait until halfway through the season and get them going. These freshmen are going to be talented players.
Coach, one more question here. Last guy, I know you love this kid, and I know how much he means to your program. And I see that he got the key to the state today, Nolan Smith. Can you talk about what a human he is and how happy you are for what he's doing in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love all the kids that play for us, and, and he's very unique. I mean, he has no I don't know what the right word is, censor, governor. He doesn't. I mean, he walked straight up to me yesterday and, Coach, you get a lot of grades, man. You got to get some stuff working on those. And I'm like, well, good to see you, Nolan. I was like, I hadn't seen you in a while. Appreciate it. And then I went on a trip yesterday and my wife sends me a picture. He just showed up at the house. And I'm like, Nolan. He's like, well, I want to go over here and see Andrew, Coach. And I just stopped by and, you know, Andrew's not there. And I was like, yeah, you know, he's got school and he's got baseball. But Nolan is just everybody loves Nolan, and he's so appreciative that he's like, Coach, the things I learned being here and the things this university did to me, I want to help repay it. He said, what can I do? How can I help? You know, and that's not normal for a guy that's been out for, you know, 1-2 years to be asking you what he can do to help. And he's got a lot of respect for him and what he's meant to the program.
30 seconds left with Coach Kirby Smart. This stuff about spring game is interesting. You said there's no guarantee we play it every year. Sounds like you're playing it this year. I also like what you said. Don't be fooled. Some coaches, separate of the portal and all that stuff and the money, they never liked playing spring games to begin with, and you're hearing about that.
Yeah, I mean, you could say there's more injuries than a normal practice. So there's your risk. You got all kinds of depth problems. I mean, I haven't even had a padded practice yet. So for me to decide that, you know, it was a given before, so everybody assumed it. But it could have happened to us last year. We were down on some defensive linemen, and there comes a point where if you can't go out and play a game, then don't do it. You know, do something else that's better for your team. So I think that's a decision you have to make every year in the middle of spring.
All right, Coach, appreciate it. Rusty, if you chart down the workout routine, you could send that along, too, as part of coming on with
that.
Us.
Whatever it is he's doing.
we're happy to do that.
It would be a quick text, I can tell you that.
Thanks, guy. Hey, good luck with spring practice. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Coach. All right, there he is, the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, Kirby Smart. On Sports Radio 99.
He still didn't bump Rusty Rocks. Let's just be clear. I don't care how many national championships he's won.
No, Rusty's in the 10. We had to bump him.
We got a Nashville topic. And nobody's bumping that.
10 seconds. Anything jump out of you from what he had to say?
Yeah, I thought his saying a lot of quotes about the wide receiver room. I like Ron Puglisi. Nobody really talks about Ron Puglisi.
Well, I like that he mentioned 8-10 different receivers all coming in a different part of the program from the portal.
And you had to catch yourself. You saw talking about the young guys like, wow, they're pretty good.
I know.
You know what I mean?
You have to
put the brakes on, coach.
I know. All right, we got a head coach of the Hawks, our buddy Quinn Snyder. By the way, Kirby Smart coming up in 15 minutes as well. He will join us. So, I don't know, Quinn Snyder and Kirby Smart, pretty good. Coach, congrats. Great win last night. Thanks for being on with us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right, so we'll get to your team, which is hot, in a second. But it is NCAA, ACC tourney, all that. We're doing a deep dive on Quinn Snyder. Everybody talks about game sevens in the NBA. But the NCAA tournament, when you're at Duke, you're playing a lot of game sevens. That's called the tournament. What about those games? And again, your junior, senior year, you go to the Final Four both years. I think you beat Temple and Mark Macon one year. You beat Alonzo Mourning and Georgetown another year in the Final Eight. What do you remember about those moments, about single elimination games and being in that setting?
You know, it's interesting. You do. I think you're right about the game sevens in the NBA. It's kind of a hybrid. You should ask Coach Smart about it too, because in some ways the singular game presents a unique challenge. Game seven in the NBA, you've already played six games.
Yeah.
You really know your opponent.
Good point.
You know, a lot of times in the NCAA, you'll get somebody and you can watch tape and do all those things, but you can get surprised. You know, whether the player's a better shooter than you think, they play faster than you think, or as you said, you know, you have a bad shooting night, and you know, so a singular game always has its own challenges, and I like the analogy too. I think the game seven, or even a bowl game, you don't have as much time to prepare sometimes, which is also a little different. There's no better feeling than on a Thursday or a Friday. Let's call it a Thursday, winning that game and watching the rest of the games on TV. And occasionally a team will lose that you don't feel too bad about.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, I've been on those runs with teams. It's that weekend, like, get through this weekend, let's get to the next week, and let's extend our time together, right? I mean, that's your last time with your senior year. Well, you got to the Final Four, so, I mean, you went about as far as you could go.
No, but I do, you know, you remember those moments. A tournament has just there's a unique feel, and it's all packed. You win, and then you go back to campus, and you feel the energy on campus, and then you go out again, and it's a unique event, as we all know.
Coach, question here, Rusty Mansell. I'm always fascinated with players late at night, things like this. As a coach, you look at Georgia last night. They barely tipped off before 10 p.m., as a coach who's been in, you know, the college setting and now the NBA setting, how do you prepare to keep your athletes ready? What's the logistics around a day like that? I'm always fascinated, and number one, at boxers. How are they training to be ready to perform at 10 o'clock at night? How do you take a day like that? How do you keep athletes from, like, peaking too early?
Well, I think it's really requires a singular approach multiple approaches for what time you play. I used to find the noon game was more challenging.
Yeah.
Oh,
not a morning person, but you're getting up and earlier, and you know, what are you doing? Your schedule and your preparation, you said it. I think guys that, you know, are really meticulous about how they prepare. You know, dinner's at a different time, I mean, breakfast at a different time, all those little things that put you in
place. It's 7 hours earlier. That's 2 hours later, but a noon start like Tech and Duke today, 7 hours earlier than what they're used
pre-game
to.
Pre-game meal is probably 8 a.m.
Right.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah, no question. Pre-game meal may look a little different, you know?
Yeah.
But, no, you're right. And time changes do that to you, you know?
Mm.
And so I think, you know, a time change on top of a game change, you guys are on it. There's some things to adjust to.
Quinn Snyder with us. Hawks won 4 in a row. A lot of great energy with these home wins. There's a lot to talk about. I just want to ask about Zachary Richesheu, who's had a great run of late. The plus-minus numbers have been jumping out at folks. What do you notice? Guy in his car doesn't see Zachary 6 months ago. You worked him out before the draft. You saw him his first day at camp. Now you're watching him get real minutes in the NBA 60 games in. What is different from the first day you saw him 6 months ago till even last night and as this thing keeps evolving?
Yeah, you know, the things that are similar have to do with his makeup. Just his competitiveness, which you'll see flashes of it where he's got a little nasty in him, as they say. His poise for a young guy. He's missed some shots and doesn't affect him, overly affect him in a negative way. And then his work ethic. I think the combination of those things have allowed him, you know, to continue to improve. And I think when you're that young, anytime you go through something for the first time, you know, so everything was the first for him early in the year, you know. And for example, we played Indiana in the preseason. That's a first because it's the preseason. Then you play Indiana in the regular season. There's another first, you know, and now you play him again last week. So you begin to get a little more of a rhythm and your expectation. There's just not as many surprises. And he's gotten better, you know, plain and simple, which is really it's not only encouraging but exciting because the things that he's working on, I mean, his balance is better on a shot. He's guy's taken over 2,000 shots. He's in the gym all the time and working. He'll be in there this afternoon.
Right.
And between games, and you're seeing his balance and his shot get better. I think he's learning to attack the rim more aggressively, particularly in the half court where he's finishing. He started to learn how to finish through people. He's got such a great touch around the rim. I think he's seen him with either hand, but I think as he gets older too, he's going to learn how to use his size and strength even more. And that's what people are seeing right now.
Quinn Snyder with us. Hawks winners of 4 in a row last night, beating Charlotte by 13. Bench, I think, goes for 57. I want to ask about the new guys. Caris LeVert, George Niang, obviously. Big factors last night. And Terrence Mann as well. I think they combined those three guys for almost 40 points. What have they been giving you? What does it mean for the future? How are you learning, you know, what are you learning about that group and how much they've contributed of late?
Well, the continuity is something, you know, that for me personally and the way that we play, it's real. And so anytime you get a trade where you get three new players, there's a little bit of a concern there. Even everything from like a communication system, you know, the style of play, the way that we play is very different than the way that Terrence played with the Clippers, or the way that even George and Caris played in Cleveland. So because of their both intelligence and their experience, they've been able to adapt really quickly. It's been an additional layer for George because I had him for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in Utah when he was, you know, when he was just starting out. So I think they've been able to impact in that way, getting up to speed quickly. And then there's the leadership component, whether it's by example or being vocal, and that's big for our team. You know, we had a lot of the young guys are just kind of finding their way, and all three of those guys, as I said, that have a presence in your locker room, I think all three of them are shooting the ball, which is big for us. You know, we've had some problems making shots early in the year. You know, we're one of the best teams in the league at getting open shots and really want to take them. Terrence is the style and what he's doing on the floor is different, and I think he's enjoying that. There's more playmaking, there's more attacking, but you know, the defense is there, and he can guard multiple positions. Very strong. You know, Georgie is as good a shooter as you'll find, but the really important thing is he doesn't need but a little window to get it off, and that's really, really important. And then when you look at Karis, you know, one of the things for us that's been important that he's done is, you know, we want to move the ball. You know, we want to play together. We want to pass. We want to cut. We want a space, but there's times you need someone to – we want to score, too. That's the whole idea. And when the game does slow down, to have a player that can, you know, can generate a shot and that is also unselfish. I think that's the important thing about him is that he can isolate. He can create a bucket, but he's also a willing passer. So all three of those guys in different ways are contributing, and I've been pleased with, you know, the fact that they've been able to do that. It's hard to keep everybody on the court right now, guys. You know, playing a 10-man rotation isn't easy. But when your bench is playing like that too, I think everybody kind of leans into it, and that's a credit for our guys.
Yeah, it's a buy-in factor when they see the results. And I love Trey's energy watching these young guys. I mean, last night was another spectacular night. We only have a minute left, but I mean, you can see, to me, it starts with Trey's energy, and then everybody feeds off it. And when he has 35 and, what did he have, 12 last night, 21 to 21 from the foul line, I don't know, man, we probably take it for granted. These are circus numbers for, you know, that's a career night for a lot of very good guards, and we just got used to it.
You know what, let me share a quick story with you. I know you guys got to go. So you mentioned Trey's, you know, free throw, 21 for 21. The other night, we've got the game what looks like sealed, but there's enough time for them to throw a full court pass and turn around and hit a shot. Improbable, yes. Trey's shot 47 free throws in a row. You know, he's got an opportunity to break the Hawks record, actually Kyle's record, Kyle Korver's record, and we asked him to miss that 48th free throw. And just to whatever the, you know, the 0.05% chance, no, he's the guy that hit a half-court shot earlier in the year.
Yeah.
So we want to avoid that. And he missed the shot, and the streak stopped, and he lost the record. And, you know, I know that we all don't live for those moments, but it just shows you, I think, the place that his head is as far as what he's trying to do. And, you know, you see that when we need him to score early, you know, we want him to score. When we need him to pass early, we want him to pass. And I'm not letting him off the hook on his defense. You've got to keep guarding.
Well, it's been fun to watch. A lot of great energy. We always appreciate chatting with you.
Oh, we got Mike Johnson. Of course we have Rusty Manziel. And big news out of Athens yesterday, pro day, and there's quite the Atlanta Falcons contingent. They had to stop at the Rusty Nuts Garage in Jefferson to get directions to Athens, apparently, but they did make it, though, right?
Rusty Nuts in this segment's
weird. Man,
yes, big balls on that one.
Yep.
You were talking to Dukes and Bell yesterday, Rusty, mm-hmm. and about the contingent of Falcons personnel at Georgia's Pro Day. Any insight into that is greatly appreciated in terms of, I guess, do we know how many defensive coaches as opposed to offensive coaches?
Let me make it easier for you.
Okay, break it down for me.
Every position coach and every coordinator, director of college scouting, director of making sure the coffee's right, director of making sure that
the breakfast burrito griddle tender,
that Squid Billy has the right parking spot in Flowery Branch.
Doors from accounting.
Everybody in the building that has at some point some say in who we are looking at was in Athens. And, you know, yesterday it started off kind of like, I don't know if some people took some shots. I think people were kind of like, because I said all 32 teams are being represented in Athens, which is the norm.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the norm. Yeah, I mean, same thing Ohio Athens. State, same it thing Alabama.
Be. I would be raising my eyebrows if my team didn't send anybody
correct,
to Athens.
Correct. What I was trying to relay with that is information was coming to me all day. So I found out early yesterday that Raheem Morris was going to be there.
Okay.
Then I find out Terry Fontenot is going to be there.
Okay.
Then you start. Then you're like, okay, now we got going. Then you find out, like, oh man, you know, D-Led tweets a picture, and it's like 10 guys checking in. And I'm like, wow, that sent 10 people.
Arthur Smith was there yesterday.
Yeah, well,
that's another conversation.
Yeah, that's another conversation. He needs to watch the Eagles play right now. but you look at that, and you go, okay, they got 10. All of a sudden, Mike, I start talking to people in the building, and they're like, dude, they had 22 members credential and check in.
Like, and what's crazy about this is, I would consider myself as big as a Falcons follower as there is.
Yep.
You know, I'm not a beat writer, but I'm right there. I don't think I could name 22 people in that building.
No.
And no. I know who Kyle Smith is. There you go.
Yeah.
So I can go on down the
Nick
list
Jones,
of people
assistant
I can name.
Offensive line coach, former Georgia Bulldog, pride of Bowdoin, Georgia.
Bowdoin, Georgia. There you go.
Not Bowdoin, it's Bowdoin.
Yeah. They were having this conversation.
Back-to-back-to-back, three-time state champs. However, I said this yesterday, in my opinion, Mike. I think Arthur Blank said, have your asses in that building.
Probably yeah. so.
Have your asses in that building.
And he's right to do so.
Yeah.
He's right to do so.
Or Terry Fontenot said, you know what? We're not going to miss. If we're not taking a guy off of this productive program down the street, I want everybody in the building to be on the same page. I want you to see what we're going to see today.
Here's what I want to do. I want to break this down a little bit, because 22 personnel, and like you said, a number of offensive pieces that are there, yep. coaching staff-wise, whatever else. Break down for me where we are in terms of Georgia's offense players. Because I think we can all name the top three guys that are going in the first round.
I think it's Jared Wilson, man.
But you're saying Jared Wilson. Obviously, Tate Ratledge is out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see them taking a Tate Ratledge, but maybe. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's something if you have a middle-round pick, which they don't.
Yep.
But maybe that's something you look at. I think we all just assume that Ryan Neusel is the guy behind, you know, from where Drew Dahlman left, and he played well last year. Jared Wilson's opened a lot of eyes.
Listen,
I am going to be curious where he lands in this draft.
All right, so Cedric Van Praan, one of the best, I would say, on and off the field players at Georgia the last 4 or 5 years.
I've heard so many good things about
him. Let me tell you something. They love this guy. When Kirby Smart had to go meet with donors, guys that wrote checks with two commas, you know who he would put in front of them? Cedric Van Praan.
SVP.
Says a lot.
He would put him in front of them. He represented, so he went to Buffalo this year, you know what, third round pick. I think he was second center. Everybody in that building would tell me Cedric Van Praan is our leader. Jared Wilson is a better player.
No kidding.
That's why Jared Wilson is one and done.
I love Cedric Van Praan.
Oh, it was great.
His film was awesome, man.
Jared Wilson, freak athlete. I think he ran the third fastest 40 of an offensive lineman in the last 20 years. In today's world, where you got a center that's got to be able to move and get out in space and get
monkey.
Second level.
I always say that about Jason Kelce.
Spider monkey. Yes. Yeah. Got to be able to move and do those things. That's a great, great term there for that. And we got to have a center, man.
Yeah.
So kind of the best case scenario that I've heard from Jared Wilson is anywhere from mid to late second, possibly early third. Where are the Falcons? They're mid-second.
They're at what, 45, 46?
At a position. So my question there is, can we trick – this is what I told Dukes and Bell yesterday. They said, what happens if we end up at Malachi Starks? I said, if we trade back eight spots and we end up at Malachi Starks at 25 and we get a third-round pick, sign me. I can't even sign a paper quick.
I'm tripping over my own shoelaces.
I can't sign the paper.
I'm with you.
Like, I know the tweet that went viral yesterday with the Falcons D.C., and you heard – I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, my goodness.
He goes, that's the safest pick in the draft.
No kidding.
Talking about Malachi Starks.
Yes.
So, to me, I'm like, hell yes.
Yes.
So, if we got Malachi Starks, let's say at 24, and we move back and we got a late second or we picked up a third, you know, now we're cooking.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, obviously, you're going to look at Mykael Williams, Jaylen Walker. Unfortunately, I text Mykael. I didn't hear back from him last night. He's probably a little busy. Unfortunately, I was like, damn, quit running the 40,
I guarantee you.
Quit running the damn 40.
That
helped him a lot yesterday.
I was going to say, when I was at my pro day, that night was dinners with two different people.
And he's Drew Rosenhaus' guy, so, I mean, you can imagine.
Yeah, Drew's got him out there.
And I will say this, Mike, tell me if I'm wrong here. Now – and he worked out yesterday. I think he ran 4.75 at 268.
Come on.
Hey.
Come on.
Hey.
Come on. We were just talking,
that's
too.
That's absurd.
We were just talking about the need for athleticism. And, you know, you go and sign Divine Diablo, who's a 4-4-5 middle linebacker. Yep. And, you know, look, you're trying to bring in athleticism to stop. But we saw it, you know, when they played the Commanders at the end of the year, you couldn't stop Jaden Daniels. They've needed more athletes since they blew the game to Kyler Murray a couple years ago. I do think it's interesting to break down. You look at Jared Wilson. You look what he could bring to the table. Like you said, if you can trade back and get Malachi Starks in the right spot.
Yep.
I'm just wondering at this point, if you're hearing that from NFL coaches saying he's the safest pick in the draft, how many other coaches are thinking that? And is 15 a safe
pick? Obviously he didn't want to get out, but so a reporter heard it.
Yes.
And they tweet it. And, you know, but he made an unbelievable play, and he goes and jumps over the freaking rope, you know, at full speed. You know, it's really the whole shot where the safety gets over on the cover two throw on the sidelines.
Yes.
He had to flip his hips, and he catches the
ball.
And he's running so fast, he jumps over the rope onto a rubber track with cleats on and keeps his foot. And, like, I would be in double ACL surgery right now trying that.
But wasn't that the sideline to sideline clip
to
that
sideline.
I saw?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Look, here's what
crazy athlete.
Here's where I was.
24-foot high school long jumper. I never get over that. 24-foot.
Here's where I was trying to lead this conversation. I think everybody focuses on, obviously, offensively, Jared Wilson, maybe Tate Ratledge. There's some there. You know, you got the three defense talents that are first rounders. Give me the. And I'm not saying. Look, I know there's going to be a Georgia fan roll their eyes at me. The Falcons have been very. They've been very good at drafting very, very late round Georgia Bulldogs. Let's just put it that way. The Justin Schaefers of the world have been there, right? Zion Lowe, Fitzpatrick, whatever.
Wayne Radloff.
Give me the guy that fits outside the first round. I think you just did by pointing to, you know, Jared Wilson and saying later in the first. Is there anybody else?
You know who I think is because I know his personality and I've heard Kirby. I've personally had a conversation with Kirby about this guy. You know who is one of those risk reward guys that you go, holy smokes. It's Arian Smith.
Okay.
Because he's a 10-200.
Stellar athlete, yes.
He plays every special. He will tackle your ass on special teams.
Yes. Give me that.
His work ethic is off the charts. Is he a natural ball catcher? He has a long way to go. Yeah. But he had a great combine. Watching him through the gauntlet made me feel a lot better. And when teams look at him and talk to him, they're going to be more impressed. So if we're going to take a seventh rounder, and we got a guy with a freaking throw frozen ropes. Give me somebody three times a game. We'll stretch you and see if you can cover this dude. Because this is world class speed. This guy's 10-200 now.
What I hear right now, when I just hear you talking, I hear very speedy Kadarius Hodge. That's what I hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kadarius Hodge, a Pro Bowler last year, special teamer. Obviously runs away from Tampa's defense, wins the game in overtime. Well respected in the locker room. Everybody loves him. Yeah. You know, you can see them celebrate when he comes in. So that's what
how
I hear.
How much can you improve your hands, though? Is that 10,000 catches a day with a jugs machine?
The problem is he fights it. So at some point, somebody might – they've had every angle with him. They've had the psychologist type deal. He's done everything. Is this kind of related to the yips? Sometimes.
Wow.
But he makes those plays in games you're like, oh my God. You know who one of the best the last 10 years or the best risk reward player there was? It was Brock Purdy.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's take him. What the hell?
Well, and a lot of people would say, to your point about Malachi Starks, that he might have been the safest pick. I know that Stake was saying that. He's like the safest pick in the draft last year. We just didn't happen to need a tight end here.
Well, Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers. Yeah, I mean, Brock, and by the way, Brock Bowers is taking 5 classes at Georgia right now, and somebody said they saw him at the red light of the day on a moped. How would you like to be?
Here's the thing.
Sorry, Raiders. I'm not trying to rat my guy out, but he's in class.
I was going to say, you know, I hope nobody ever catches film of that because there are some NFL contracts that just straight up say he can't be on a motorcycle.
They say my man eats 3 meals a day in that building like he don't have 8 pennies in his.
I love it.
He acts like he doesn't have 8 pennies in his account.
I love it, man. Anything else from Pro Day yesterday? Because I know you're as plugged in as anybody. You are the plug to the Georgia program. I am so – we got 22 Falcons personnel. Give me who's in second place.
I'll tell you this. Minnesota and New England both had 5
rips. Minnesota and New England both have 5.
Yeah. So everybody talks about Philly.
Okay.
Everybody talks about Philly. Philly had 2. Philly's probably like, hell, we've seen enough. when they're up, we'll take one.
Philly's like,
The Dolphins, what's interesting, though, like the Dolphins, I asked on the Dolphins, they brought 2. They brought their head coach.
And so they brought Mike McDaniel.
Mike McDaniel was there. And a director of scouting.
Wow.
So, you know, you look at that and you go bang for your buck. My head coach is there, pretty damn important. And, oh, yeah, I brought the director of scouting. You know what I mean? So it's not lack of interest. 32 teams are – I think the storyline yesterday was the Falcons brought 22 people. And I swear on my
three
kid's life –
three vans full.
Swear on my kid's life, so people are probably rolling their eyes. I have no insight on this, but I guarantee you, Arthur Blank said – have your ass in that building.
Yeah.
And somebody better. If we don't take a if you don't take a Georgia player, I'm okay with that. But I want you to know that everybody in the building said, just to give me an example, everybody said, we're going to take Shamar Stewart over Mikal. If they're both there. That's fine. If the building's there.
They are comparable.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm good if you think we're getting the best player.
At least give the appearance of doing due diligence.
They did yesterday.
Before
that was,
we go
that
to
was
break,
purposely.
I just want to ask both of y'all. And look, take your Georgia glasses off. Are y'all okay if we take a offensive player with one of our first two picks?
No.
Because I think that a lot of Falcons fans are like, absolutely not. We need, if somebody falls to you, I perked up about
Malachi
Starks. We need a safety.
Yeah.
You know, we need a safety. But I am curious. I would be curious to know from Falcons fans how many are comfortable with an offensive player. If Jared Wilson was there at 45 and you took him, I think a lot of Falcons fans would probably roll their eyes, even if he's a Georgia guy.
Who's my guy? God, my brain went. Who's my guy at the Eagles? DeJean Cooper?
Cooper DeJean,
my guy. Hey, I don't know if you saw the behind the scenes on that. He fell to them, and they didn't think he was going to. They thought he was going to be gone. They were like, wait a minute.
They were like, wait a minute.
This guy's here? So if something happens like that, and the Falcons go, wait a minute, there's a tackle that's fell to us, I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm okay.
All right,
quickly before we let you go, Mike White,
Cooper, but you,
NC State. Early, man. Mike White, NC State. Yes, no, maybe.
I mean, then, does it really matter?
Does it really matter?
He's coming off a loss last night at midnight, and he's
it's Jimmy's and Joe's, man, now. It's so Jimmy's and Joe's. I think he's done a great job with Georgia. Can they keep – I'm going to talk about it next hour. Georgia's got a big question on their hand with Asa Newell.
Yeah.
I mean, he's – Yeah, a lot of people think he's a lottery
pick.
A lot of people think maybe he's not right now.
Really?
He had a double-double last
night.
Yeah, I
mean, I was kind of like,
it's hard to get those six. Here's the thing. If I'm going to get a lottery pick, I got to know every night that dude's hell on wheels.
Yes.
Some nights he is. Some nights he isn't. But he's also 6'11". He's also 19 years old.
Yeah, that's a good point, man.
You know what I mean?
When I watched Brandon Miller at Bama, it was like very evident most nights. You were like, holy crap, that guy is a Jesse.
Yeah. Well, you watch Broom at Auburn. He's bringing his lunchbox with him.
That's a good point.
So he's also like 38, but, you know, Asa Newell's 19, got a big ceiling on him. But it's going to be fun. We're going to talk about the rest on the steakhouse. But, man, I think a statement yesterday with the Falcons, 22
boom
representatives in the building. Listen, if they don't take one, they don't take one. But I guarantee you that Arthur Blank said, we better be on the same page in this building.
A cynical PR ploy is what it was then.
Hey, they made it yesterday.
They made it happen. Yep. Hey, thank you, brother.
Thanks, man.
Look forward to you at the top of the hour.
Hey, man. The Pistons fell to the Wizards the other night. So, Carl, it is, you know, technically still possible that we could get that locked in six spot. We felt that, you know, the way Cade Cunningham's looked, you know, Pistons are 7 games over .500. Could the Hawks ever get there? Right now at 23.5 behind the Cavs, but 4.5 games behind the Pistons for that locked in spot. We'll talk to the man. Puffy K has got to be excited about the Hawks with a 4-game win streak and taking on the Clippers and the Beard. Should be a big crowd. What's up, Steve Coonan?
Yeah, hope you guys are having fun out playing golf at East Lake today. I heard from several friends, I've seen both of you on the back nine. How'd it go?
That's not accurate. That's completely inaccurate. Carl is suffering from some sort of sinus infection, and I'm suffering from an aching back, Steve. We're working from home today. We're not well.
So y'all played golf with these injuries, from what I understand.
No, again, I don't know if somebody saw me at East Lake. I mean, in years past.
I'm looking at pictures right now. That was a nice pink polo, by the way.
I have been described as a fat Chandler, and Carl has been described as looking like Coach Tomlin. So if those two guys were there, then so be it.
So, Carl, you're not doing the Hawks game tonight?
I am not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I hate when golf gets in the way of that. But hi, guys.
Would you stop it?
Oh, yeah. If she was on the other foot, you wouldn't start?
No, I mean, look, one of our favorite places in the whole wide world is East Lake. And this time of year, before it gets too hot, we can actually walk the course without dropping dead. It would be very exciting. But no, Steve, you got some bad information on this Spy report.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I made that up. We'll see how it goes.
No, believe me, I'd like to project myself to East Lake right now. Go hang out there in the club room and get some of that great food. Steve, man, the Hawks are on a nice little run, and we've just laid out the situation. I mean, looks like a 7 seed and Trey just doing what Trey we know he's capable of, and then maybe a matchup with the Celtics. I mean, I don't want to get the cart before the horse, but you know, decent things are happening right now for the Hawks.
Yeah, we're really encouraged about because what we're taught to do as professionals is one game at a time, not looking forward, just looking forward to tonight's game against the Clippers. They're a good team in playoff hunt also. But the guys are playing really well, and what's very cool about it is everyone's contributing. I think we've had 6, 7, 8 guys in double figures over the last few games. And so the ball's moving and scoring and playing some defense, and tonight should be really, really good. Come on down.
Yeah, look, and I just think for whatever reason, and maybe it just takes time, Steve, but the guys off the bench, Niang and Mann, and certainly, you know, all the guys that are meshing right now off the bench, it just you're getting all this production that we just didn't see earlier in the season. And this trade all of a sudden feels like we got the better end of the stick here, right? The best of the deal.
Well, I like what we've got, you know, and that's all you can worry about is what you have on your roster. And these guys are all making a contribution, and each one of them, I think at least one or two have been in double figures every night since the trade. And we have a winning record, 9-6 since the trade deadline, and having people can contribute. And, you know, I mean, if I'm really honest, there's some stats flying around about how we would be if Jalen was playing.
Right.
We're projected we'd be fourth in the East. You know,
I believe that.
I'm excited about this year, and I'm even more excited about next.
Well, I mean, we've got some good things going. We want to keep that thing. We have no idea how the money's going to be spent. You will have some money to work with. Maybe not, as we said, don't have to go after, you know, name brands, because as you've pointed out a number of times, you know, in free agency, you can't talk about specific players being an NBA executive. But, yeah, I think if you could fill it up with worker bees that address the needs of this team. But I would love to see Caris LeVert come back next year, Steve, because he's been fantastic.
Every single guy on the roster has really made a contribution. I can't talk about, you know, certain things, but I happen to agree with you.
Nice.
Steve Coonan,
in your condition, in your medical condition.
No, I'm just on Advil. It's just a bad back. It's, you know, old guy stuff. Back to you, Carl.
Steve Coonan, Hawks CEO, joining us as he does on Fridays. So Hawks in action tonight, by the way. But as we talked about, with the league itself, Steve, and I'm just, you know, we talk about all these different things. So, baseball, Mike and I were talking about this, and at some point they're going to have to get a new TV deal, and I think we mentioned this to you a couple of weeks ago, and somebody was asking me about the new deal next year for the NBA. Do we know how all of this is going to look or work, right? We know NBC has it. We know Peacock's the games are going to be on Peacock, but like, everything's been laid out to how this is going to look to us as viewers, right?
Absolutely. I'm going to try to do this from memory. On Monday night, you're going to have a game, an exclusive game on Peacock. On Tuesday, you're going to have two on NBC, a doubleheader on NBC. On Wednesday, it'll be ESPN. On Thursday, it'll be Amazon. On Friday night, it'll be ESPN and Amazon. On Saturday, it'll be ABC, ESPN. And on Sunday, it'll be NBC. So like both Amazon, football, both Amazon and NBC want to continue their sports on their feature night Thursday with Amazon, Sunday with NBC. So it will take that that rating slot. And so there literally will be NBA basketball on national television and streaming 7 nights a week.
Wow. Okay. I know that, again, viewing habits have changed. We've talked about younger folks. It was interesting. I guess you can't comment on this because there was some articles in The Athletic. Carl and I were talking about, I think it was Tuesday, a couple of unnamed general managers of MLS teams basically said going to Apple for MLS was a losing proposition. And if you're a season ticket holder, you get the free Apple, which is great. But otherwise, it's not growing their brand. They're better when they're on, like, I guess, a linear or regular, you know, over-the-air TV.
Well, Apple Television, which is a very good product, only has about 25 million subscribers, and I'm a subscriber to Apple TV, but I have to pay incrementally to get the soccer package. So, right. You know, it's I can't comment because I've seen the economics and I've talked to a lot of different teams. They sacrificed reach and ratings for revenue, which, right. You know, some teams decide to do that. In 2003, when I was at Turner, TNT took over the NBC package of the NBA, and a lot of people were really worried that the league would suffer because it was moving from broadcast to cable, but cable had this incredible growth, and the NBA on TNT, you know, was a 20-year incredible run till it just, you know, will end at the end of this year. I think the MLS is a bit ahead of their time because all the data shows we're all going to streaming. So it might be a little softer in the first couple of years, but I think, and it's a 10-year deal, I think it's going to be really fine. One of the things that, I don't know if you guys have seen WWE on Netflix. Yeah. It's one of the top shows on Netflix, not only Monday night when it's live, but Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So by being on streaming, a lot of these sports are getting longer legs where people are watching, you know, delayed broadcasts. So it is all up in the air now. I mean, the world's just changed so radically.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great point about it, you know, because people are watching when they want. And so even though it's on Monday, they go back and watch on a Wednesday or rewind or whatever they want to do. It's Steve Cunningham, guys, with the Atlanta Hawks. Hawks in action tonight against the Clippers. The Claw is not playing from our understanding. Is that right, Mike? The Claw's out tonight?
We believe that Kawhi Leonard is shockingly out of this matchup. We will see the beard, though.
My heart.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sorry, maybe Steve. It just makes me
maybe
laugh.
He'll come in the club and have a drink with us.
Yeah, he just might. Let's talk about, as we move forward with the rest of the season here, let's talk about what the Eastern Conference and specifically, you know, what you think about the East compared to the West. Everybody says the West is just loaded, and it feels that way, right? It just does. It seems to be maybe it'll be harder to come out of the West. But I feel like if we get into a seven-game series, and I was saying this to Mike, I don't know who we're going to end up playing, but I feel like if we're playing the way we are right now, you might surprise some people, Steve. You might get a little bit further than people expect you to. And Mike was saying if we can just get to 500 and build on it, how much confidence would that give you heading into next season?
Oh, I happen to agree with you. I think that, you know, the whole idea is get in the tournament. I don't care how you get into the playoffs. If it's play-in, so be it, because the seventh and eighth would have been in the playoffs before we created the play-in. And the play-in's been wildly, wildly exciting. In the West, you're probably going to have, you know, one or two big brand NBA names in the play-in tournament, like a Golden State potentially. Who knows how long LeBron's out, the Lakers could slide. Which would not, again, break my heart, considering we have their draft pick. So I was pretty happy to see Brooklyn beat them the other night. Or you might see Phoenix with their, you know, trio come in the 10th spot. Who would have thought that? So I think it sets it up for really exciting basketball. Somebody said to me years ago, you want to have meaningful games in the spring. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening tonight. Right. That's what's going to happen over the next couple of months. Meaningful games in Atlanta with the Hawks, and that should be a lot of fun.
Steve, it is Luca with you. Good to visit with you. First time speaking with you. Anyway, we could sweeten pot. Maybe we send the second round Laker pick if you send pizza oven to arena.
Wow. Yeah, you must be delirious with fever with that bit.
What? All right, Steve has poured cold water over the Luka bit, Carl. Moving on. Hey, by the way, in addition to all the stuff going down with the Hawks, you will get March Madness action coming to State Farm Arena. Yeah. Talk about that, Steve Cooten.
Cool, yes. Very excited. You know, Sweet 16, Elite 8, and we're the home for the South. And I think the South, any way you slice it, whether it's Duke or Auburn or Alabama, the South is going to be, a number one or a number two seed. And it should be the best Sweet 16 and Elite 8 bracket to watch. So I'm super excited about that. That's going to be incredible. Incredible. Yeah. And that's the beauty, again, of our city, is that we can host big events. And between Mercedes-Benz and what they do and what we're able to do and the All-Star game coming to the Braves this summer, there's always something great coming to our city.
Yeah. All-Star game is going to be a lot of fun. And we are getting one. I know we've asked you this, but we are up for an All-Star game in the NBA when? 2030?
We're targeting, we'd like 2029, but
okay.
Candidly,
yeah.
So mm-hmm. much depends on if the NFL goes to 18 games and when would the game be. And, you know, you don't want to go up against the Super Bowl. That would be suicide.
Right.
And don't you always get jammed up with some gymnastics competition? There's always something which the All-Star...
Sheer sport, but again, which is great for the city. 50,000, you know, people coming to Atlanta is great for the economy. And we are big enough to host something like that, but it has blocked some, you know, availability of dates. But now that the Super Bowl probably will be shifting, there could be a real opportunity. So you know, we're in active discussions. And then Centennial Yards, which is right across the street from State Farm Arena and from Mercedes-Benz Stadium, will be opening and fully programmed. And that would be, you know, a great thing for visitors to be able to literally stay in a luxury hotel, walk across the street, and come to the games.
Nice. All right, man. Steve, looking at the standings, I see the Hawks are scoring an average of 117.4, but the opponents are scoring 119.6. Tell Quinn to straighten that out, won't you?
Well, I think if you look at the season in slices, where we've been lately, before Jalen got hurt, we were number 8 in defense.
Right.
And then there was a gap, and now we're trending back in the top half of the league in defense. But, you know, there were a couple 140-point games in there that skew the numbers.
That's true. But, yeah, but I will say this, the margin getting back as far as the point differential for guys who follow that, you know, all the teams that are above the line, above 6 and higher, are all on the positive side. We're getting close, right? As I said, just 2 points off. So we just said, I mean, we're not looking for moral victories, but I think, Carl, we'd agree. If you could finish with a winning record this year, and then you imagine playing the Celtics in a 2-7, that would the city would be electrified.
Meaningful games in the spring. That is our goal.
Right.
Without further ado, we have one, Grant McCauley.
G-Mac.
We are just, 13 days away from the season opener out in San Diego.
I got to hurry up and get that baseball draft in, Grant, my fantasy team.
Yeah, you do. I haven't even been able to give you any advice this season, so I don't know if you need me or not, but I'm here. You got the number. Just let me know.
Hey, look, let's start there because you and I had a chance to have this conversation yesterday. Michael Harris was one of my keepers last year. It didn't work out for the best for me, but you said before that Michael Harris will continue to be a breakout star until he breaks out for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's just my view of this because I really do. And the last couple of springs, it has been, you know, you see, you know what he did to win the Rookie of the Year. You see him come in and you think there's even more there. He's capable of more. He's going to win his Gold Glove. He's going to hit 25 or 30 home runs. He's going to steal 30-plus bases. He's going to, you know, do what he's done if for large stretches of seasons, but do it over 162. And that, I know, is Michael Harris's goal this year, and the Braves would very much like to have that kind of season from somebody, let alone just put the production aside. It'd be nice to have somebody, I guess, besides Matt Olson, come close to playing 162 games.
Well, he's a latent MVP candidate, if you ask me, if he just stays
there. You go.
He's the only guy that hit in the postseason last year.
Check that out. I got to check the odds on that.
Yeah, but they weren't there for very long, so there's that.
That's true. All right, back into the rotation. Holmes has looked pretty good in the spring. Ian Anderson struggled a bit. A.J. Smith-Shawver going well. Also, how do you see this thing playing out?
Yeah, I think that you're going to need this depth over the course of the year. Yeah. I've talked a lot about this. You know, the Braves used 13 starting pitchers last year. That's a stat that, you know, the first time we spoke to Brian Snitker down in Northport, he was quick to point it out. We used 28 pitchers and 13 starters last year. So as much as we love the idea of this guy and this guy and this guy all being lined up and healthy all year long, we know we're going to have to count on some of these others to be able to carry this, you know, team forward at times. And one of the things they benefited from last year, particularly Chris Sale and Ronaldo Lopez, was having that extra day kind of built in as much as possible throughout the season. The off days created some of it, but so did some of those other starters. And that's the kind of thing the Braves would like to have as much quality and consistency in as they can. So maybe it's not quite as much of a revolving door. And a guy like Grant Holmes, Ian Anderson, A.J. Smith-Shawver, those are towards the top of the list for obvious reasons. And this Grant Holmes thing is just fascinating because you look back at it, you know, last June, It was a 10-year odyssey just to get to the big leagues. And by the time he got to game 162, it's win or go home already. You're not getting to the playoffs if you don't win that game. And Grant Holmes is the guy that ends up getting the ball on 30 minutes notice, and you win. So it was quite a season for him. I do think that what he does is legitimate. He does miss bats, and I'm kind of interested to see what he can do if he gets this starting role and is able to hold on to it for an extended period of time. For Ian Anderson, just, you know, quickly on him, we all saw what he was prior to Tommy John surgery and what he did in the postseason in particular. Can he be that pitcher again is the question he has to answer, but a more important one or more pressing one for him and for the Braves is, can you give him the time and the opportunity to do it? Because he's out of options this spring. So if he doesn't make the roster, his time in a Braves uniform could be done. So a lot of decisions to make there at the back end of the rotation. And then, of course, you have the numbers game when you get Spencer Strider back and you've got Chris Sale, Ronaldo Lopez, and Spencer Schwellenbach hopefully all locked in place. It's going to be interesting to see how the Braves manage all that.
Grant, I want to get back in the conversation you and I were able to have about the speed on the base pass, because I want you to paint this picture for Braves fans the same way you did for me. I've mentioned it till I'm blue in the face on the show that Ronald Acuna finished last year as your leading stolen base guy, and he only played, you know, a month of the season. He finished with 16. Nobody else even came close. I feel like, in my opinion, that's what you're missing from a team that won 100 games 2 years ago. Although the Braves, you know, obviously won a ton of games last year, there is no, like, threat on the base pass outside of Ronald Acuna, even though you signed Yerkson Profar. I think he had 10 stolen bases a year ago for San Diego. Your thought on that was different than I thought it would be. I thought you would kind of come to terms with me and say, hey, look, yes, they need to find more speed. Maybe Yerkson can up those numbers. Maybe it's Michael Harris. But you had a completely different take on stolen bases and speed on the base pass altogether.
Yeah, I would push it kind of down into the middle of the list and more of a situational awareness that I feel like is beneficial for them to tap into. But the list of guys that can steal you a base is not very long. And, I mean, you just mentioned the two top guys, which is going to be, you know, a healthy Ronald Acuna Jr. when you get him back. I still think he's going to run. I mean, we don't have to get 70 steals out of him for it to be a successful year. There's a lot of things he can do. Then you got Michael Harris. To a lesser extent, Ozzie Albies, I think, is a good base runner and can pick his spots to do that. He's got a pretty good percentage over the course of his career as far as success rate is concerned. But beyond that, I mean, you don't have a lot of guys that you're going to ask that from. And if there's something that the Braves were missing last year, it was the ability to hit consistently, and it was, you know, multiple hitters that went through that. So I think the thing that the Braves want to see is a healthy team getting back to what it's capable of doing. And that means the Austin Rileys, the Ozzie Albies, the Sean Murphys, on down the list, and Ronald Acuna Jr. being at the very top of that list. Let me not bury the lead there. That's a completely different looking kind of offense. I mean, Michael Harris missed 2 months last year. It seemed like everybody had something going on except Matt Olson, and then he just went into one of the longer slumps and worst slumps that he's had in his career and was able to finally pull the nose up in the second half when he said, and I quote, he stopped being so mechanical about it and just went out there and just tried to let it happen and use his natural ability and stop analyzing it. And that, I thought, was a really fascinating response when you consider how much analysis that these guys are doing on a daily basis. But to go back to your question, to answer it as succinctly as I can, the Braves want to do the things that they did so well in 2023, whether or not they approach those numbers or not. That's get on base and slug. If they do that with the lineup that they have and the roster that they have, this is a team that's capable of winning a lot of games.
All right, I want to ask you about analytics. Certainly it became sexy, and it became basically the main thing of teams focused on for the most part. I mean, Gabe Kapler basically managed with an iPad for the most part, got criticized for that. Is there kind of maybe, I'm not going to say de-emphasized, but are teams going to maybe take more into account the human element, kind of like what Snicker does?
They're trying to thread that needle, but it's never going away. I mean, that die is cast. I mean, and look, you know, hitters, I mean, Matt Olson's a good example of it, but, you know, you can go on all around the league and, you know, they go to these laboratories where they work on their swing all winter long to try to get that perfect angle, to try to, you know, eliminate mechanical hitches or anything that could, you know, keep them from being the best version of themselves, basically. I mean, it's almost a, you know, a full-time job, and it is a full-time job for these other, like, hitting clinics and whatnot, and some of these guys are being brought into baseball just in general. Teams are hiring from these places. I know Driveline has been huge for pitchers, and that's a different discussion, but now you're seeing those guys get hired by clubs because they believe in what they're finding. by using the advanced approach of trying to help guys, you know, I think, become the best version of themselves. That's probably the easiest way to say that, to use that phrase again. But the analytics in terms of player performance and in terms of advanced metrics and in terms of, you know, how front offices value players, that I don't think is ever coming out of the equation now. And that, I think, is something that players, and this is what Tim Hyers, the new hitting coach, kind of talked about. It's, I need to relay the statistics and the things that make a point that are beneficial to the player. We don't need to get lost in it. And I think that's probably the best approach for it, because, you know, you don't want to ignore the information, but you can also get lost in it. And that can, you know, compound over the course of a season where baseball is a game that is very much physical, but also very much mental. And too much of that stuff, I think, can be too much of a good thing.
Finishing up here with Grant McCauley, 92.9 The Game Braves Insider. And I'm glad you brought up Tim Hyers. That was going to be my next question, Grant. And I think that there's probably I don't want to call it a misunderstanding, misnomer, or whatever you want to call it, about what hitting coaches actually do in Major League Baseball. You had a chance to be down in Northport just a couple of weeks ago. Tim Hyers takes over for Kevin Seitzer in that role. What Major League hitting coaches, what exactly are we dealing with when you make changes right there? What is their number one job? What do you think Tim Hyers' number one job is this year to make changes with this lineup?
I think it's to approach everybody as individually as possible, because they're all different. And Austin Riley was asked about this at the start of spring training and said, all right, well, you know, Tim Hyers is coming in. Well, what does that mean for this club? And obviously everyone can look at 2023 and say, okay, well, we know what you're capable of if everything goes right. And then you can look at 2024 and say, well, we know what can happen if a lot of stuff goes wrong. And he said, you know, this is the hardest job perhaps in baseball, is to be a hitting coach, because you do have completely different types of hitters with completely different approaches, completely different mentalities. But I think he wants to simplify that process and concentrate more on the day-to-day and less about the, you know, the very long and difficult grind of the season, less about getting, you know, too far into the lows especially will drag you down, and that can compound. And I think we saw a lot of that last year. And I think, you know, what Matt Olson said kind of spoke to that, is everybody wanted to be the guy with the bat in his hands to turn it around, whether it was a given day, a series, or a month for the Braves, or a long particular period of time. So for the hitting coach, I think the job really is to simplify it and to help guys as they go along to see the adjustments and help them make the adjustments more quickly so that they can kind of, you know, do the thing that they're capable of doing. And that may sound like the most simple or straightforward answer possible, but it really isn't that, you know, complex a job in terms of what the goal is. But getting the job done and being able to get those results, everybody, I think, spends all season long, you know, focused on that moving target. And it's going to be one for Tim Hyers this year. But I like the voice. I like the message. And I think that the Braves have been open to that and are excited about having the opportunity to learn and adjust and figure out ways to put 2024 as far behind them as possible.
What percentage of Tim Hyers' job is just simply psychologist?
I would say a large percent is. I mean, he's going to do a ton of work, a ton of homework, a ton of video analysis, and everything that's, you know, going to be what he presents to these players. But, you know, once you get into that game, it's about knowing personalities. It's about relatability. It's about being able to deliver that message and getting guys to buy in to that given message as well. So I would say, Rob, a large part of that job is going to be, you know, the psychologist, to help relate it to them, help relate to them, and help them to, you know, figure out a way to tap into what I think, again, is a whole bunch of talented hitters that it may not have shown last year, but they've got to figure out a way to get back to that this year.
Well, it's a big part of my job when I fill in on the morning show, psychologist as well, my friend. So I appreciate you
bringing that.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you, guys.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, midday show with Andy and Randy. Does he get it, do you think?
Who, Joe?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he gets it. Because the reason I'm saying that, the reason we're playing the Stone Cold Steve Austin is not because of my brother from another, John Chuckery, who's down in Florida on the beach getting his tan. It's because I saw Joe Patrick for the first time in a long time. And I've never seen Joe without a hat. I saw Joe without a hat one time. I was like, oh, that's what Joe looks like without a hat.
Usually wears a hat.
Just like me. I came to work on Tuesday.
Freaked everybody out.
And I forgot my hat. Freaked all y'all out. I'm like, Randy, what's going on? I was like, yeah, I forgot my hat. I was getting Nico big ass in the car.
Yeah.
And
Luckily
I had one here. So, I mean, I always got a hat and shoes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so Joe yesterday comes in. He has the beanie on. And then he takes off the beanie. And Joe has no hair with the goatee.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I thought about He wants Stone Cold.
He likes trouble.
Yeah, he likes trouble because he's moved our date, our time, four times in 2 days.
I know. No kidding.
11:40, 12:20. No, you know what? I think I want 11:40. You know what? Joe just said 11.
Is he even on hold? Like, is he available?
Is he there?
Oh, he is. Okay.
Oh, he's there. Okay.
Great. Well, then let's get to him.
Yeah.
In one quarter, we've got 92.9 The Game's Midday Host.
Stone Cold is about my moving the time and me just bouncing in whenever I want.
That's two birds with one stone. Cold.
In the other quarter, 92.9 The Game's with Boulder Smoke and Joe Patrick at an undisclosed height and weight because he likes to cause trouble.
Two birds and one stone. Cold.
Joe. I'm about to open up two cans of whoop ass on y'all. That's true. The hair's gone.
Is your new haircut the most interesting thing that's happened Falcons free agency related?
I think you're going to say more most interesting thing about me, which is yes. Falcons free agency? Yeah, probably. I mean, the Falcons free agency has just been kind of re-signing some of the depth players or some of the, you know, kind of budget quality players like a Mike Hughes that they've had. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough when you lose a player like Grady Jarrett, Andrew Dahlman, like two key starters for you, and to think that you're actually, you know, making the team overall better. And honestly, guys, you know, I know we're just kind of diving right into a Falcons conversation here, but, you know, I think that it's going to be the theme of this defense where, like, they're going to have to rely on players to step up who have not quite, you know, proven it yet in their careers. Not every guy on that defense. Obviously, some of them, Caden Ellis, Jesse Bates, we know the stars. But guys like Ruka Roro, guys like Trey Anderson, you know, can he stay healthy and prove that he's a quality NFL player? I think, you know, the Falcons' defensive fate and, you know, frankly, the fate of the team, I think is going to rest on some of these players being able to step up and fill the void for some of these key players that they've lost. It's not that they've lost a ton of players, but they've lost some very key players they're going to need to make sure they have cover for.
Hey, JP, were you surprised at the re-signing of Mike Hughes because of, you know, there was always a thing where they need a new corner. Yeah, they still need another corner. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
But for him to come back on the number that he came back on?
Yeah, no, I was not surprised because I did think that they talk glowingly about Mike and what he brings to the team, not just for his, you know, what you typically want from your cornerback in terms of the coverage skills and everything, but what the coaches will talk about when it comes to Mike Hughes is the physicality that he brings and kind of setting the tone from a position that's not quite known for, you know, kind of establishing that. And that's just a quality that he brings that really, I think, helps give the defense some identity. Now, when it does come to the coverage for him, I think there's a key here, which is that they see him as an outside corner. And if they were really going to go for, you know, some high-quality cornerback, obviously that's not so much available in the free agent market for this team, considering the circumstances. But, you know, if they were to target somebody from the outside, I don't think that Mike Hughes would be the corner that they would want playing the nickel. But based on the fact that they did re-sign him, I think that we now have a clear indication that you're obviously going to have AJ on one side and Mike Hughes on the other. And they could very well draft a cornerback with their first pick, with the 15th pick in this draft. I think that corner can be expected to slot in as a nickel corner, which is a starting player in the NFL. By the way, I know a lot of people hear nickel corner and you kind of think, oh, that's a backup. No, that's a full-time player on an NFL defense. But and maybe if they do draft a corner, you would think that the track for that player would be, you know, you start as a slot and then maybe we'll potentially move you to the outside, potentially move you to safety if that player is capable of having that versatility. But I think that it definitely, you know, lends to the fact that, you know, they are very comfortable with Mike Hughes in Raheem Morris's defensive system, the coverage system that he likes to deploy in, you know, doing what they think he needs to be doing.
If you had made a list, and maybe you did because you cover the team, you write stuff down from time to time, of Falcons' needs pre-free agency, and then you checked that list now, is it shorter? Is it longer? Is it the same? Like, how has the last week shifted the roster composition and what happens next?
It's a great question because I think that it's nearly the same. I think that there's one position you can – I'm going to say like kind of tick off the list, even though I think that they will add to this group probably in the draft. I think there are some interesting players at the back end of the draft they could target here. But at the linebacker position, I think that by signing Divine Diablo, elite name, they have rounded out that group now with four quality, four linebackers that they trust. Now, can those players be on the field all the time? Like Troy Andersen, we'll see. But with Caden Ellis, Troy Andersen, Divine Diablo, and then J.D. Bertrand, who I know that they love, and I think that there are some weaknesses to his game, but I think that they are very happy with him being the fourth linebacker in this team. I think that they're pretty well covered there. Again, I think that they could use maybe one of those seventh-round picks that they have to, again, go after one of those guys, although when you're talking about a fifth linebacker on a team, that's a special teams player mainly. But I think that what they've done in free agency is smart in that they've kind of covered their bases. They've gotten essentially bodies in at all the positions that they kind of need. Center not so much, but they still have the right of first refusal, so they haven't really executed the transaction on Neuzel yet, but they've kind of got him sitting there ready. So I'm considering him part of the team at this point. But what they don't have is kind of that top end quality at some of these positions. And so, you know, again, nickelback is a huge issue that still stands out. Safety, do you trust DeMarco Helms? I think there's a lot of questions about that considering he missed all of last year. Going into last year, I think that there was a lot of optimism that he could take over that safety spot. But yeah, and then how many resources do you want to devote to that spot to make sure that you're covered? I think that you at least need another body there for sure. And then on the defensive line, it'll be interesting to see what happens because I still think that there's a player in particular in David Onyemata who's on the roster at this point, but I still think is a cut candidate really? At some point. I mean, he's making $17 million. He's $17 million against the cap this year. If there is a move, potentially a big move out there that they're hoping to get done, potentially for a Troy Henderson, for example, then maybe David Onyemata is a guy who's still there because they want, you know, they know that they can kind of free up that money at any point in time. But I still think, to answer your question, Andy, there's a lot of talent that they need to bring in at the kind of the top of the pecking order, the top of the depth chart in some of these areas. But I think what it's been smart that they've done is kind of cover their bases. So from this point forward, they can go out there, whether it's the draft or a trade or free agency, and kind of address that top quality issue and really target whoever they want and give themselves a lot of versatility in that respect.
I did not realize his number was that large. And when yeah. And I wanted to ask you – now I got to change my question because I was going to ask you something about 18. But if that's the case, how much faith do you think Arthur Smith has in this Raheem Terry Fontenot regime to be able to – commit long-term type things like that? Because you're going to have to give up a lot if you want to go get a Trey Hendrickson. So do you know if they have – no, you probably don't know, Joe. But do you think they have the faith to maybe have to give up a possible two next year in order to get a guy like that?
I think they would. You know, the Trey Hendrickson thing is really interesting because the reports out there are saying that the Bengals are demanding a first-round pick, right. Which – man, that brings me back to the conversations that we were having about Lamar Jackson back in the day where, you know, I was kind of making the point where it's like, yeah, like you should definitely, you know, if you can get a quarterback of that caliber, you pay him whatever he's worth. But can you actually, has it been stood up as, is there a test case out there that shows that you can actually win a Super Bowl by giving away two first round picks and then paying the quarterback that much? I was not sure about that. And I think the same here with Trey Henderson. I mean, you're going to have to give him a big number. That's going to handicap your team in a way where you then need those top picks. You know, you need your first-round picks in that case if you're going to be paying that number. So I think that there is still, you know, this team can still open up a lot of cap space. I shouldn't say a lot, like a substantial amount. Like, let's say enough to cover a big incoming player coming in.
Beyond Onyemata, what are the other ways they could do that beyond Onyemata?
Jesse. Yeah, there's a restructures they could do with Chris Lindstrom, with Jesse Bates, I believe they could restructure. And this would be temporary, just like opening up cap space. So you could just open up cap space for this year.
Right.
So then you could fit guys in. Then you'd have more problems to deal with down the road. But I think we all want to see them bring in, you know, high caliber players that can help this team immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of gets back to Randy's question of like, yeah, short-term fix, long-term ramifications.
But
if the short-term fix doesn't work, the long-term ramifications are somebody else's problem. And are they empowering these guys to be like, you know, mortgaging the future to save their own personal future? I don't know. I would hope so. Like, I would hope that even though it is like win or go home for some of these guys, I feel like this year from a Falcons front office perspective, I would still hope that Arthur Blank would be like, you know, do whatever you think is right. You know, like you got to do what you think is the best thing for now and for the future of this team, even if I don't know how long your future is.
Exactly. Yeah.
I would hope.
I think Terry Fondo has been responsible about the signing so far. I don't think we have any indications that he's, like, you know, going into this free agency period with his job as the top priority. I don't think that's the case at all.
No.
So,
no.
But we'll see.
No, but I mean, they're the same thing, right? Like, if free agency right. period goes well and they win, then his job is retained. Joe, we appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Smoking Joe Patrick there joins us.